Support for This Day in Esoteric Political History comes from Odoo. If you feel like you're wasting time and money with your current business software or just want to know what you could be missing, then you'll need to join the millions of others who have switched to Odoo. Odoo is the affordable, all-in-one management software with a library of fully integrated business applications that help you get more done in less time for a fraction of the price. To learn more, visit odoo.com/thisday. That's odoo.com/thisday. Odoo, modern management made simple. Hello and welcome to This Day in Esoteric Political History from Radiotopia. My name is Jody Avergan. I don't know where to begin with this one. Basically, what we are marking is a moment in 1992, the moment when Morris the Cat declared his candidacy for president. We should note that this was Morris the Cat's second time running for president, had run in 1988 as well, and this was a publicity stunt. Morris the Cat was the spokesfeline for Nine Lives Cat Food. So here is this cat food company putting up their mascot as presidential candidate to get a little attention. So, here to discuss Morris the Cat's presidency, and I promise this will be worth it, is my co-host, as always, Nicole Hemmer of Columbia. Hello there, Nikki.
I'm so annoyed, Jody. I just finished a book on the politics of the 1990s, and I have nary a Morris the Cat mention in it. My editor's going to be so mad.
Yeah, after the end of this episode, you'll loop back around and
second edition.
Exactly. We should say Kelly Carter Jackson is out today, so she won't be joining us, but our guest this episode. We are very thrilled to welcome back to the show Adam McKay, director of Don't Look Up and Vice and The Big Short and Anchorman, and someone who I worked with on this podcast series, Death at the Wing. Adam, welcome back to the show, and we should start to answer the question, why the fuck is Adam McKay on this episode? But here you are. Thank you for joining us.
Thanks you guys for having me. And I couldn't believe it when you emailed me about this. You are the first person how long ago was it? 92.
30 years.
So here is the context. Well, we should give credit to a listener, Mark, who actually was the first person who started this chain that leads to Adam being on this show. Because Mark says in an email to us, told this story that he, as an 11-year-old, was visiting New York City and somehow ended up at the campaign kickoff event for Morris the Cat's presidential campaign, the sort of stunt that was being held in Manhattan. And he got a chance, actually, as an 11-year-old, to ask a question of Morris. And all these years later, very recently, Mark was tooling around on the internet, went back, found an AP article about this event, and lo and behold, in there, there is a reference to Morris's 24-year-old campaign spokesperson, a, quote, Chicago-area comic named Adam McKay. And so Mark emails us, says, I know you're pals with McKay. Is this for real? We confirm it. And so you were the spokesperson for Morris the Cat in 1992?
So here's the story. So I went to Chicago I was at Temple University. It was my senior year. And I heard about long form improv from a really good friend of mine, Rick Roman, God rest his soul, brilliant improviser, comic, had gone to Chicago. And when I was in Philly, came back and told me about this kind of magical scene with Del Close and these theaters where you would get on stage and just make up a play, basically. And this is what I had been waiting to hear. So I sold everything I had and I went to Chicago and I did improvisation. I was doing a place called the IO Theater with Del Close. It was amazing. And then we started to create the Upright Citizens Brigade with Matt Besser, Ian Roberts, and Horatio Sands, and myself. And Matt Besser, his family, I think his dad had his dad was friends with Bill Clinton. So they had a little bit of money. And they had bought Besser a Honda Accord. And we just thought this was the most, you know, baller thing ever that Matt does. How broke we were. meanwhile, I grew up with like a mom who was a waitress. Ian Roberts was all scholarships. Horatio said, so like among our group, Besser was the rich guy, even though he wasn't that rich. So Besser left town and he said, McKay, you can use my car. And I was like, oh my God, this is great. I've been taking buses, trains. And one morning I get up and the car's gone. And I look everywhere and I was like, someone stole his car. I'm like, oh, shit. All right. And I start call the police and they're like, double check where it's parked. And I'm like, I'm telling you, I'm looking at it. We're in like early April. And I go back and I see a sign that says snow zone, you know, whatever, October 10th through April 15th. But it's meanwhile, it's like 70 degrees out. And so I call the impound lot and they're like, oh yeah, we got your car. So I call Besser and he's like, dude, anyone who knows Besser, this is a pretty good impression. Dude, I have like $3,000 in parking tickets. Like, what do you mean you got it towed? So I have this moment where I'm like, I'm broke. I've been here for a couple of years. I left college with like 22 credits to go or whatever it was. Maybe it's over. I think I should go back to college. And I went to the woman who ran the IO where Del Close was kind of the big legendary improv teacher. Her name was Sharna Halpern. Her name still is Sharna Halpern. And I said, Sharna, I think I'm going to leave. I just got Buster's car towed. I feel responsible for the $3,000 he's going to owe. It wouldn't have been towed otherwise. And she said, don't leave. I have a friend who's working at a PR firm and they're about to do this big thing for Nine Lives, Morris the Cat, and you'd be perfect for it. No, you know, I've been on auditions, you know, many times. You know, if I got a lot of auditions, I wouldn't be a writer director. So, you know, I got like my entire time auditioning, I think I got 3 gigs out of like 100. So I went, all right, I'll try it. And I went and they had me improvise. But what I didn't realize was that I look like a campaign director and I'm an improviser. And I was performing a lot at that time. And I got the gig. And the gig was every time you show up with Morris the Cat for a PR event, mm-hmm. you get, and once again, this is 92, $700. Mm-hmm. And I said, well, how many gigs is this? And they're like, well, it's going to be like 12 to 15 gigs. I was like, I am back in the saddle. Yep. That was it. It changed everything. Now, it later turned out I got Besser's car out of the impound lot. And they really didn't have computers back then. No one ever checked it.
Amazing.
So all my worry and fear was for naught. But during that mm-hmm. kind of panic, I got this gig. And because of that gig, I was able to get an apartment. I was able to have some money. And that kind of pushed me to the next step, which was, you know, our improv group, the Upright Citizens Brigade. I auditioned for Second City. Once you get in there, you're getting a little bit of money. And off of that, I got Saturday Night Live. And the cost of all of this was performing at these ridiculous, silly, craven marketing events where I would say he's the perfect candidate over and over again. And I was fine with it.
People have done much worse for much less.
I knew he wasn't going to be Ralph Nader. I knew he wasn't going to bump any legitimate candidate off. I knew it was a craven publicity stunt. And I was there for it, 100%.
So,
and now your listener who talked to you, I remember the event that he's talking about. And it was at the, what's it called? The Winter Garden.
That's right.
Theater.
I'm looking at the AP article right here. The Winter Garden in Lower Manhattan, Winter Garden Theater. And he asked you a question, asked if Morris the Cat had ever inhaled catnip, because that was in the air with Clinton.
Oh,
and
my
your
God.
Apparently improvised response was, or, you know, has Morris the Cat ever done catnip? And your response was, he's rolled around in it, but he never inhaled.
There we go. That's why I paid $700.
In this AP article, There's a lot of good details in here, but one of them is a quote from you. And in it, it says your single quote is 6 words. And it's, your quote is, "I do improv mostly, but hey." So, I think.
And sums up that point in my life. I do improv mostly, but hey. Yeah, that's correct. And the primo weird gig of all weird gigs was Morris the Cat's campaign coordinator.
Well, what is so interesting about this is it sounds very off the cuff and very improv, but Morris the Cat actually had a pretty well-developed platform. I mean, his biggest problem was that he was only campaigning in deep blue states, but he had a domestic policy that was mostly about the fact that domestic cats are superior to wild cats. As you've talked about, his controlled substances policy of saying no to catnip. But there's a whole list, a whole fully fleshed out set of campaign positions that Morris the Cat had staked out as part of his candidacy.
That was the shock when I got into it. I thought, well, this is a puffy kind of cat food stunt. But Morris the Cat was actually ahead of Hugo Chavez. He wanted to nationalize the oil industry. Uh-huh. Yeah. And he wanted to create a statewide militias that were unarmed to challenge the Second Amendment. I mean, there were some radical ideas in there. He was the very first candidate, a lot of people don't know this, to suggest UBI, universal basic income. And so there is some heavy crap going on there. Like, I remember meeting the American Communist Party with Morris the Cat. I remember Abby Hoffman was still alive at that time. We met with Abby Hoffman, and Morris the Cat was like, "I will get fixed on camera to show that reproductive rights are actually," that's not a funny joke, because literally, I forgot, America is half a step off of Saudi Arabia at this point. So I'm going to back off that joke. But yes, Morris the Cat was really surprisingly radical and reading a lot of Noam Chomsky and Althusser. And so that was a whole kind of bonus experience to it.
Yeah, real political awakening for you. 92, of course, split election. Perot's in there. So, I mean, it was a moment for spoiler candidates. I actually went and tried to find the granular vote totals. And Morris the Cat was not on the ballot anywhere. And so we couldn't tell how many votes they got. But there were 13,000 write-in votes somewhere in there. There had to have been a Morris the Cat write in 92.
Oh, I'm sure Morris the Cat probably got at least like 400 votes. By the way, I'm laughing. I started making that joke about Morris the Cat, and I realize I've been out of the country for 2 months. And in the 2 months I've been gone, I now no longer can make like the world has changed so much. I started to make a joke about reproductive rights, and I realized, oh, that's not funny at all. Like, America has veered so hard in a matter of weeks. Anyway,
let me ask you a couple other questions about Morris, but also kind of about your sensibility. I mean, you mentioned, you know, you would get up there. The AP article references the pun laden speeches you would give, and this domestic policies. Their policies, PAW. You know, and I mean, I can see the roots of your comedy in here, because I watch your movies sometimes and I'm just like, enough with the puns, you know, it's just one after another. No, but seriously,
he is the perfect candidate though. He really is.
But this got me thinking, it made me curious, what do you think of the pun as a comedic art form?
And I think it's the worst. Okay. I think it's the comedic art form that's pretending to be funny, but it's actually a logical trick. And it doesn't kind of hit the senses in the same way as comedy. So I think it's like comedy for cartographers, or comedy for like code breakers.
Or
like
cat owners.
No, I think pun is not even in discussion as a legitimate. And they told me to make those puns, and I was like, you got it.
Yeah.
Like, I don't have to go back to, you know, get my degree. I get to keep doing improv. This is relatively harmless on the spectrum of like moral compromises. I was like, I'll say, and he's the perfect candidate. I think one of the jokes I wanted to make, which they would not, there were a bunch of jokes they would not do, but one was he'll put a mummified vole in every pot. And they were like, we don't understand what you're saying. And I was just like, I've got the gig. I don't care. Yeah. Whatever you want.
You're so, like, I can be bought.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. In that case, that's the most bought I've ever been. But I did do a little surveying of the horizon line. I was like, this seems harmless. It's cat food. You know, they weren't exactly, you know, well, was it Northrop Grumman? Yeah,
I was going to say it's
like Cap Buchanan.
Does Monsanto own Nine Lives or whatever? But it's actually the Heinz Corporation, which, you know, that's the family tree.
And it was 92. Yeah, I'm not even sure that.
One of the little tidbit that's just kind of amazing is apparently Eleanor Mondale, Walter Mondale's daughter, was roped into all of this and did the introduction. And so there were actual political figures floating around. I don't know if you've buried that memory, or maybe that was in the 88 campaign. All right, I want to ask you actually sort of a serious question coming off of this as we wrap up. But, you know, we've done a few episodes on like political stunts. We've even done episodes about like animals who have been put up for office or whatever. And, you know, whenever I kind of see this stuff, I like am of two minds given where we are now with our politics. And one is, yes, like I wish we didn't take things so seriously and that it's a real problem that, like, you know, people are defining their entire identity through political tribalism and like pitting themselves against each other. And so a little bit of humor and, you know, showmanship isn't the worst thing. Then the other part of me is like, actually, that's all we're doing now is we're just like, it's all showmanship. It's all mouthing off. It's all for clout on social media or whatever. So I'm just kind of curious, like, if you have thoughts about theater and absurdity and humor in the realm of modern politics.
Well, I would say nothing demonstrates the difference between how we're living now in 2022 and how it felt to be alive in 1992. And I always joke that, like, 1997 is always the year I pick, where we were having a lot of fun. It doesn't mean there weren't problems, but for the most part, it felt like democracy was relatively sound. Like, the media wasn't great, but they kind of did a good job. Big money was starting to run away with shit, but at least I wasn't aware of it, and the people around me weren't aware of it. There was a great alternative music scene. And if you go to 92, I mean, we were outright like gleam in our eye eating grilled cheese sandwiches and apple pie. I mean, the idea that we could be at 2022 and literally without exaggeration, I mean, I think given the Supreme Court decision that's coming down the pike about states' control of certifying elections, I think we're really like 2-3 years away from democracy being over in the U.S., not to mention the climate catastrophe that's happening now. So I think more so what it shows you is just, man, that was a goofy, simpler time. And it didn't mean dark stuff wasn't happening, but still, it kind of felt like America was in a great spot. We're going to be okay. And we never imagined, I mean, we were worried, but we never imagined it would happen so fast that we're only, you know, 30 years in the history of a country is nothing. Yeah. And we're at 30 years. And once again, I don't say this as a matter of politics or right wing or left wing. I mean, we are factually at the precipice. So I would say if anyone did this now, not cool. Like, to jump into our electoral politics and make a joke.
It's not a game.
And use it for marketing. But I would also say this, that if you did run Morris the Cat and there was a really opportunistic marketing person behind it who went after like woke culture and critical race, like, I'm not saying this as a joke. Morris the Cat could actually win a congressional seat, maybe a Senate seat. Like, no exaggeration. I mean, you know, Marjorie Taylor Greene, Herschel Walker, whatever that guy who used to cruise girls in the malls in Alabama. Like, I mean, I really do think that if you did this, if you ran the Geico Gecko behind an angry, like extreme right wing kind of agenda, there's a real chance like the Gecko from Geico could be a representative from like Arkansas who is advocating for like flamethrowers to be classified as guns.
I like that we've just outed the Geico Gecko as a fascist.
Yeah.
Which seems.
By the way, I know nothing about Geico, but honestly, fuck them. They've been blasting my life with those idiotic commercials for 20 years. I don't give a shit. Leave this in. Don't edit it.
Don't worry. We're too small of a podcast for them to sponsor. Nikki, you write about this era. Like, you know, what do you make of that sort of transition that Adam's describing?
Yeah, I mean, I think that it felt like an innocent time. I think that the roots of much of what we're dealing with now in the U.S. started in the 1990s. I mean, if you look at the 92 campaign, Morris wasn't the only celebrity candidate. You had people like Ross Perot, who really made his image through TV movies and through Larry King Live, and Pat Buchanan, who'd come up through CNN. So there was something shifting in American politics and political entertainment that wasn't necessarily perceived of as the time as poisonous as it would turn out to be, and didn't have to inevitably turn out that way. But I think that if you go back to 92, Morris the Cat is the high point, and the rest of it is pretty ominous looking back 30 years later.
By the way, Nikki's 100% right. There were tons of, like, Gopher from Love Boat was a congressman. I remember when that happened, yeah. Being like, the hell, Steve Largent, who was like one of my favorite receivers for the Seahawks, became a hard right wing congressman. Jim Bunning, who I believe pitched a perfect game in baseball. So you're right, all these, and then the ultimate example, which I still think is very downplayed, is Ronald Reagan, who literally is most famous for a series of movies where he played opposite a monkey, Bedtime for Bonzo and the Bonzo series. So you're right. Like, with the emergence of new media, a whole different array of horrible, nefarious moves became available to big money. But you're right, Nikki. Like, the 90s, man, I was a big, lumpy, dumb white guy at that point, and I was fairly politically engaged. Like, I actually marched. I actually was aware. But even then, I had no idea that it would end up with this.
And, you know, I think one of the things you're describing is that it starts with a hacking of just name recognition is everything to start with. And Morris the Cat, there were polls in the field. 70% of the public knew who Morris was. And so I think you're right. Like, if you start there, if you have 70% name recognition and then you just sort of pair that with the politics of the moment, you're going to be in pretty good shape, as we've seen time and time again.
I think if you ran Morris the Cat right now, you might get 7% of the vote.
Easily.
Morris the Cat campaign slogan, walk softly and carry a big can opener. There isn't even a pun in there. That's bad. his policy on Iran-Contra, any cat would have smelled a rat. So there you go. you rub my back and I'll scratch yours. All right.
That's it. You got a winner. Yeah. You got a winner.
All right. We're going to end it there. Thank you, listener Mark, who actually, we should also give a shout out to Stacey Roberts Steele, who works with you as a producer at Hyper Object Industries. But Mark knows Stacey in the real world and then emailed Stacey, and that's how this all came together. So thank you, everyone. And, you know, now more than like 6 people know about this, which is wonderful.
But I can't believe you guys found this. I can't believe
it. And listeners, we'll spend a lot of time, probably way too much time, tweeting out artifacts from this, because there's the AP article, there's photos, there's videos, there's all sorts of stuff. So just check the Twitter feed, check the newsletter, and you'll see all sorts of great ephemera. But Adam McKay, thank you so much for doing this.
My pleasure. I'll come on anytime. I love you guys, and hope you're well.
Yeah. Nicole Hemmer, thanks to you as always.
Thanks, Jody.
Announcing a surprising new presidential candidate, Morris the Cat.
It's time we had a finicky president.
The Nine Lives candidate insists every cat should be completely satisfied.
I speak to the real silent majority.
They deserve real food for real taste and nutrition.
Who wants to be fed a bill of goods?
And he urges cats across America to vote Nine Lives.
Really a more of a satisfying choice.
Radiotopia.